Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Forum Club, Lakers podcast from The Athletic. I'm Bill Oram, joined by Jovan Buha, who is at the scene of the Austin Reeves miracle, the dagger in Dallas, Austin, Texas. Austin Reeves hits the game winner against the Mavericks last night to extend the Lakers winning streak to three, their second three-game winning streak of the season. Lakers are now three games above 500. They're on the road. Jovan is on the road also. He is, as I said, in Dallas, getting ready to head up to Minneapolis for the second stop on the road trip. Jovan, listen, man, you're on the trip. You were in the building. I could tell you what I thought of Austin Reeves' shot. I could tell you I think it was the best moment of the season. But what the hell, man? Tell me what it was like. What was it like to be in the building? And what were some of your takeaways from that moment?
Well, I certainly agree with you. It was the best moment of the Lakers season. And it was
so
really
many
this
to choose from.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. But
a minute and a half into the podcast, I already went there.
I mean, just what a finish to that game, right? Like there were so many. I mean, it looked like another one of those situations that the Lakers blow a game against, no offense to Dallas, but a lottery level team without Luka Doncic. So they're playing another either, you know, lottery team or undermanned team, you know, blow another game, and you know, they Dallas screws up the rebound. They have two guys fighting for it. Ball gets loose. AD tips it to Wayne Ellington, who wisely pump fakes, gets, I think it was Dorian Finney-Smith. I don't remember exactly who closed out on him, but he hits that huge three after just airballing a three. You had so many weird plays on the stretch where guys are airballing and then they're coming back and making big plays. You had Russ, I don't know if you saw the corner angle, but there's a corner angle of the Russ shot where you can see Dallas's reaction where they're like happy that he's taking that corner three. And then all of a sudden it goes in and you just see their reaction like, come on, Russ is hitting a three against us in crunch time. Like, and then Austin, who had just gotten chewed out by LeBron for making a defensive mistake and not getting out to a shooter, makes the biggest shot of his career and really isn't that fazed by it. Like, you saw him celebrating. He was happy, but just his composure and you know, the way that his teammates talk about him, the way that Frank Vogel talks about him, and the way he talks about himself. Like, this guy has incredible poise and maturity for someone that is only 23 years old and went undrafted. And I thought his story about, you know, talking about Lon Kruger and when he realized, you know, he was a redshirt transfer at U of O, or, you know, Oklahoma.
OU.
I messed that up.
U of O was the other
U of O
school
is
that,
different one. Different
some
school.
Some of us from the Northwest don't love.
Yeah. So at OU, he talked about, didn't specify if it was a practice or a game, but going out to his pickup truck, which was a nice detail. And Kruger comes up to him and says, you know what? I think you have what it takes to make it at the next level. And that gave Austin the confidence that, hey, I already believe it, but this is someone who has seen players and has molded players that have gone to the NBA. And the fact that he's telling me that, that's all the confidence that I need. So I thought that it was cool that, you know, some 200 miles away from the AAC was the moment where Austin realized he could play in the NBA. And I think last night, the rest of the world, the rest of the non-Laker world saw it. And I thought it was just a really cool moment and something that could potentially galvanize this team. I know we've said that multiple times this season, but last night felt a little different.
I feel like we need a gong for every time somebody says that this could be the turning point in the season. Like, I don't know.
I didn't say turning point because I know people don't like that phrase.
Got a glass bottle of water here. Let's see if I can get a sound effect. Yeah, turning point. Like a little more resonation.
Every time we say turning point, take a shot.
Oh, there it is. There, I've done it. Probably just like made 50 of our listeners, all 50 of our listeners, like recoil in pain with the dinging in their ear. Yeah, I mean, listen, man. I mean, it was, you know, when you're a team that's like still searching for an identity and like trying to build, you're going to hold on to the moments, you know, that bring you together. And like, I don't know, man, like I thought it was great watching DJ dump the water bucket over Austin. And if you look closely, you know, who's in the background filming the whole thing, Russell Westbrook, you know, and LeBron passed him the game ball in the locker room. You can't tell me that that doesn't do something for the collective spirit and chemistry of the team. And, you know, it's cool that you've got a guy who not only is a rookie or an undrafted rookie, but on this team with, you know, he said it last night, you know, 6 Hall of Famers. He said you could argue more. I don't think you could argue that there are more than 6 Hall of Famers on this team, unless you think that Austin Reeves is going to one day get there. Six Hall of Famers on the roster. At this point, sure, why not? Like, let's just lean all the way in. But to me, it's pretty clear that, you know, they've really embraced him and brought him in and, you know, trust him. And you know, there was, you know, I would say, you know, Miran Fader from The Ringer wrote a really long, in-depth profile of Austin Reeves yesterday that got into a lot of, you know, details about how much the Lakers have embraced him. But it's, you know, he has the trust of LeBron. He has the trust of Russell Westbrook. And by the way, I will say Miran Fader with like maybe the all-time greatest feature timing ever, dropping a story on Austin Reeves the day that he hits the shot of his life. But, you know, he's a part of what they're doing here. And the fact that he is, you know, they trust him in those crunch time situations, that he now has the experience of hitting a big shot, you know, on this stage. He's hit game winners before, which is something we can talk about. But the fact that he did it, you know, in an NBA game when the Lakers are really in need of wins, and more than that, even they're really in need of not losing games to bad teams, which, like you said, the Mavs currently are without Luka. So, I mean, I just thought it was a really, you know, powerful scene all around for the Lakers last night to get that. To get that result, to get the moment for Austin, you know, and like if Wayne Ellington hits that three, you know, everybody's gonna, you know, be excited and, you know, he'll get doused and all that. But, you know, Wayne Ellington's supposed to make that shot. You know, that's why he's there. Austin Reeves, you know, the fact that he's on the floor in December in the final seconds of a game against a potential playoff opponent is not something any of us would have expected. Now you can point to the circumstances. You know, the Lakers have been shorthanded this year with injuries, and now you've got 3 players in the COVID protocols, which, I mean, has been another big theme of this week. So, I mean, circumstances dictated that he'd be on the floor, but he's also been consistently productive for the Lakers when he's been on the floor this year. And so, really just a super positive and pleasant story in a season that, I mean, listen, Jovan, you and I have talked about it. There hasn't been a ton to you know, feel good about with this Lakers team, because there's such a constant weight about, well, are they a championship team or not? Because that's the only standard. And it was nice just to have a moment that you could appreciate for what it was, which was a really nice moment.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think last night is a genie, you know, in the bottle moment for me, where there's no going back to Austin Reeves collecting DNPs and, you know, playing a bite-sized role on this team. Like, to me, I don't know if there's a better two-way wing on the Lakers right now, aside from the obvious of like LeBron James, right? But aside from, take the stars out, among the role players, there might not be a better two-way.
Thank you for that clarification.
Well, yeah. Well, honestly, Reeves has played better defense than LeBron recently, but that's a whole other conversation. But, you know, among the role players, Austin Reeves right now, I think, is the best two. Like, I don't know a guy who's playing better on both ends, you know, collectively. You got like Avery playing well defensively and some other guys playing well offensively, but that two-way, you know, nature that he has, I said this in a recent mailbag a couple weeks ago. I think he probably should be the starting shooting guard, and go Reeves and Ariza around the big three. I know that's unlikely. It seems like the Lakers are really intent on starting Avery Bradley and or Talen Horton-Tucker. So I don't know if Reeves cracks the starting unit, but to me, he proves he should probably be in the closing unit, and he should be playing 20 to 25 minutes every single night. And because he's not going to shoot the ball this well, he's not going to go 5 for 6 on three every night, but he just does all the little things. And he's that type of glue guy that is just really, you need that in, a productive unit. So, that's, I just, what? Yes. Four. Thank you. All right.
Some of the perils of podcasting from your hotel room. We're definitely not editing that out, by the way. So tell us everything. Like, people like to know the life of a traveling beat writer. I'm on the edge of my seat. What just happened? Paint a picture for us.
Okay, so it is 1:15 Central Time. I requested late checkout when I checked in. Late checkout for me is 4 p.m. My flight actually just got delayed during this podcast from 4:30 to 5, so I have a little bit of extra time here. But the cleaning lady just opened the door because she was knocking and asking, and I didn't want to stop my thought on Austin Reeves, so I let her interrupt the podcast, and I just told her that I'm checking out at 4, so I have another 2.5 hours to be in this room, and then I gotta
Madam,
go.
Madam, don't you know that this is the Forum Club? You should have invited her in. I mean, it's the Forum Club.
I should have asked her what she thought of Austin Reeves.
Experience. big Mavs fan. Listen, I am going to ring the breaking news gong, I guess I'll call it the intelligence gong. Hold on. Okay. So you said Austin Reeves should be the starter. One thing I was told, and if you go back to November, Austin Reeves was playing really well and was playing big minutes right up until he had his an ankle injury. I think he had a sprained ankle or something like that, whatever it was that cost him a couple of weeks. I'm such a great reporter. Hamstring, ankle, something in the lower extremities. But I was told he was supposed to start that game against Miami back on November 10th when the Lakers, had lost, to Portland, and then they, eked out a win against Charlotte, and they were kind of mixing things up. They were going to go with the small lineup and start Austin Reeves. And then he got hurt and he missed games, and then he had to work his way back into the rotation. But to me, that is, that shows you that they have had confidence in him for a long time, and not just out of necessity. I mean, a long time, a month, but, going back really to the start of this season, they've been looking to get him opportunities, and they do believe that he, to your point, I think they see him as that, top two-way wing that they have available right now. I don't know if he makes as much sense as the starter once Ariza comes back, because I don't know if I trust Austin as the spacer that he was last night. I mean, 5 of 6 is, incredible. I mean, I don't know that you can count on him to go 2 for 5 on a nightly basis even, but, the potential's there for sure. If he can be that player right now, it gives them the ability to go small more. It gives them the ability to look more like the team they wanted to look like, if he can sort of fill that Ariza role, at least in spirit.
Yeah, and he doesn't have the size of Trevor Ariza, but I think he's a better shooter, and he's a better passer, and he's a better ball handler. And I do think we are trending towards, once this team is healthy, if they ever get healthy, and we've been saying that all season, it is a situation where maybe he and Ariza kind of split time, and it's one of them is on the floor as the other wing that is kind of that 3-and-D presence, and then the other spot is an Avery, a Wayne, a Talen, a Malik, depending on the matchup and what you're looking for. But those two, at least on paper for Ariza,
a Wayne, a Talon, a Malik. Or how about just Wayne, Talon, or Malik? Like, it's like you've got like a basket full of people named Wayne and then Talons and then Malik's. Like, what a stupid device to say, like, you know, could it be someone like Trevor Ariza? No, but it could be Trevor Ariza. Like, someone like him. Like, I just, like, I love the stupid things we as people say. Not to pick on you, but that is a stupid thing.
Thank you. my point being is, like, I think the Lakers have some interchangeability among, you know, again, like, to me, Kendrick, Talon, and Malik are all relatively similar style of players. You know, that they're offense first guys who can give you 18 on a given night. They can give you 6 on a given night. But I think Austin and Trevor, at least Trevor in theory, provide stuff that those guys don't provide. And that is two-way play consistently. And you know, in Trevor, that's a little more size. It's a little more defense. With Austin, it's a little more, you know, shooting and playmaking. But I just think he has something that this team needs. I think he's consistently shown that. The data backs it up. He leads the team in plus minus. And I know he's missed some time, but I don't think that's a coincidence. I do think that the Lakers play better on both ends with Austin Reeves. So I think they have to find, like, again, to use the cliche, like, it's a genie out of the bauble, out of the bottle moment, as I can't speak here, where Austin, I think he just can't go back to a small role. I think he needs to be playing 20 plus minutes every night, whether that's a starter, closer, or just in the second and third quarters. Like, he needs a role. And I think that was clear earlier. He lost his spot after getting injured. But now that he's proven this again and just reaffirmed what he can do, I really don't think there's anyone else in the rotation aside from maybe Ariza that can do what he can do on both ends. And that's really important for a group that has struggled to find two-way lineups.
So we agree Austin Reeves is great, should be playing more.
Seventh Hall of Famer.
The seventh Hall of Famer on the roster. We've made it very deep into this podcast without saying the term Hillbilly Kobe, which frankly I feel like has fallen out of the lexicon. And I don't know, like, has there been like a collective, like, under, like, I don't know, has there been a memo not to call him Hillbilly Kobe? Like, do people find that disrespectful or something? Because I feel like Hillbilly Kobe has not remained the nickname of choice for Austin Reeves, and I find that to be unfortunate.
I think it's too long. I've seen some HBK.
It's too long.
On Twitter. Well, no, I'm just saying. I'm trying to provide the why I think people stop. I just think it's too long to type. I think people, like, most nicknames are short.
Society, right? Is, like, broken. Society. If we can't type Hillbilly Kobe, society is broken. That's because nicknames suck. We live in a shitty nickname time. We finally have a great one. Like, I mean, listen. Like, can you imagine if Charles Barkley's nickname was CB or just Bark? Oh, big Bark. Like, the round mound of rebound.
Yeah, that's, like, a great one.
I don't know.
But where I was going to go with that was that now people are calling him AR-15, which is a loaded, pun intended, term.
I mean, listen, it's like AK-47 with Andre Kirilenko.
That one, though, you had the Russian element, though, too, which kind of tied it together nicely, aside from...
True. But I mean, there are other nicknames for Austin Reeves, by the way.
I'm going to stop now.
But let's get the housekeeping staff back on the podcast. So there are, like, other nicknames for Austin Reeves, and I want to go through some of them. And by the way, I've come up with all these on my own. So I just, like, if there are other actual nicknames for him, like, that's great. I've tweeted many times that he could also be known as Arkansas Vujicic. And because he's from Arkansas, home of the Razorbacks, Pig Country Reeves.
Okay.
If you have better ones, tweet us on Twitter at Bill Orem, at Jovan Buha. Let us know what you like. AR Fresh, like with the not bald eagle, or like just Caruso sorta. I don't know. Like, definitely
Vanilli.
He's definitely the Caruso replacement. All right, so the big thing entering this week, I guess we'll pivot. I don't know. I guess we could do is just do an hour on Austin Reeves if the room would allow.
There's some big stuff to talk about.
There is, and, like, chief among them, by the way, is the fact that the Lakers are not whole because of the health and safety protocols. They had three players right before this road trip enter the health and safety protocols and end up staying home or going home. Talen Horton Tucker was the first. The Lakers canceled practice after he entered the health and safety protocols on Tuesday. And then by the time they got to Dallas, Dwight Howard also stayed behind. And then Malik Monk, who made the trip, was sent back. I believe that it's been reported that assistant coach Phil Handy entered the health and safety protocols. I believe he made the trip as well, although I guess I'm not certain on that one. You might know from being there. And then Bill McDonald, the venerable voice of the Lakers on Spectrum Sportsnet, play-by-play man, good times. Bill McDonald has also entered the health and safety protocols, and he was also on the trip, and as I understood, it was basically almost to the arena on the bus when he realized he needed to go back to the hotel and quarantine. So, obviously a lot going on with the Lakers, and probably not out of the woods yet, and the continued testing that they are, going through, trying to make sure that they are, healthy as they hit the road to go to Minnesota. You'd have to say, playing without Dwight Howard, who's a big part of what they do, Malik Monk, wasn't trying to ring any gongs. Malik Monk, who's been, their second best bench scorer behind Carmelo. And then Talen, who has been a starter and was coming off of a 19.6 steal game in the win against Orlando. Those are big pieces to have to adjust to playing without. And, last night's win was not, you're not putting it on the, you're not nominating it for game of the year, but they survived. I felt like they did a good job of surviving without those guys, and they're gonna have to do it, it would seem, for several games more going forward. What's kind of your outlook on the rest of this trip and then going forward? Because like I said, 3-game winning streak, finally getting some separation from 500. They were back and forth, right at 500 for about a month. Getting some separation, maybe trying to make a move in the West before the schedule really gets more difficult, which starts basically next week once they're back. It gets difficult Friday in Minnesota. The Wolves are pretty good. They've already spanked the Lakers once. And same is true of Chicago, who the Lakers will see on Sunday, although we don't know who's going to be playing for the Bulls because the Bulls have had their own massive issues with the protocols. But if this is the Lakers group going forward, no Malik, no Talen, no Dwight, for a week or so, how do you view the Lakers' ability to sort of survive?
I got to know who's playing for Chicago first because, right, like they've already had 2 games postponed. Their next game on the schedule is the Lakers, and they had to move the start time back. And there's no guarantee that game happens, right? As of now, it looks like it's going to happen. But I think the Lakers got lucky, honestly, because the way it had been characterized to me yesterday, like Malik was on the plane. Malik traveled with them to Dallas
for sure.
The testing stuff is all over the place in terms of like, kind of what we know and when they're getting tested and whatnot. But the way someone at the game told me it yesterday is like, they had a test in the morning where they do the little nose swab, the little quick test where you get your result in 10, 15 minutes and everybody tested negative. And then they did the PCR test and that takes, 6 to 8 hours or so to get that back. So they already were on the plane to Dallas when all of a sudden they started getting all these negative, these positive tests of this person has it, this person has it, this person has it. And all those people were already on the plane. And, there could have been a massive outbreak and everyone on the plane, no one's wearing a mask. Everyone, it's business as usual. Everyone's operating as if, no coat, like that's just how teams are operating right now. Once you're on the plane and it's a private jet and, it's only, team personnel, but that could have been, that could have spread through the entire roster, right? Or anyone who hasn't had COVID that we're not aware of. So that could have been disastrous having Malik on that flight. So
you just alluded to something that's really important and I'm going to get off my chest because you're right. They did get lucky, but this double standard that the Players Association has created where like, if you are behind the scenes at an NBA game, players move like there is no COVID. Like, you know, they're not wearing masks as they walk through the tunnels. You know, they're not wearing masks as they walk out to their cars. You know, everyone else who's there is required to, you know, do what they can, right, to do their part. And that includes mask wearing. And we'll be sitting in the press conference room, and a player will come in and sit there and talk to us for 8 minutes. They're not wearing a mask when they enter the room. It's not like they're just taking down their mask to talk. I don't know that they have a mask, you know, on their person. And, like, there are exceptions, but, like, by and large, that's been the reality. And I just feel like there's been this double standard that, like, oh, players are different. And it's like, no, they're not. They're people with respiratory systems who, you know, can catch the virus. And, like, I'm going to say, kudos to Frank Vogel. NBA coach, vaccinated NBA coaches are not required to wear masks. I know they coached in masks in the bubble and last year as well, up until maybe the playoffs. And finally, you know, once vaccines, you know, the vaccine kind of became more commonplace, you know, vaccinated coaches didn't have to wear, head coaches didn't have to wear masks anymore, which was understandable for where we were as a society. And Frank Vogel last night, you know, knowing that there's an outbreak with his team, you know, coached in a mask. And, like, you know, he doesn't have to do that. And I think, you know, it's, you know, does that protect him, give him additional protection? Probably some. Is it maybe a little more of a statement than anything else? Like, probably, but it's, like, a good statement to make. And Austin Reeves did his media last night wearing a mask. And, like, I just think, you know, that messaging is important, and I respect those guys for doing that, because, like, you know, they operate in a world where, you know, it's like you go downstairs at the Lakers practice facility, you know, you walk into a practice, it's like there's, you know, it's not like those guys live in the facility and they never go anywhere and never see anyone else. You know, it's like there's just been a double standard that's been created. Like, it doesn't exist for NBA players. And that is what you're clearly seeing now is not the case. So that annoys me. And the fact, like you said, that they're on the plane and, you know, largely, you know, presumably not wearing masks. I mean, I think the Lakers tweeted or Instagrammed a photo of Malik Monk getting off the plane, you know, not wearing a mask in Dallas. You know, obviously didn't know yet. It's just, or maybe it was getting on the plane, one of the two. But it does sort of speak to sort of the cavalier nature around NBA teams that I think the league is trying to reverse, a trend they're trying to reverse now.
Yeah, I was just going to add that LeBron and AD wore masks. LeBron kind of had his around his chin.
Yeah, good show.
I don't remember if Russ did or not. Russ did. So I do think the Lakers made a point. And actually, after we were leaving the press conference, Russ went last. Frank was in the hallway and was kind of walking with us. And at the end of, you know, just 2 minute quick conversation, at the end of it, he's like, all right, going to go get tested. And he went into, like, this side room. So, like, I think the rules are different once you've had players in protocols. I think there's increased testing. I think the Lakers as an organization are trying to send that message of mask wearing, you know, increasing that at least temporarily. But I'm with you that there's a giant double standard that it's felt odd because, you know, we have all these restrictions on us, and not to compare us to the players necessarily, but it's, you know, if one of us gets it, the other one's probably going to get it because we're in the same room for 10 minutes. You know, so yeah, but I think, I guess to get back to the road trip, the Minnesota game will be interesting because the Lakers were in control of that game in that first half, you know, let it slip towards the end of the half and then got spanked in the third quarter. The Chicago game, another one where, I mean, they just trailed from start to finish in that one back at Staples Center, but we don't know which Bulls players are going to be available, which ones won't. But I think the Lakers are headed in the right direction. And again, this is where you take a shot, you do the dong. But 1-3 in a row, have won 6 of 8 and 8 of 12. And I will preface it with, this has been a really easy stretch of schedule. If you look at 2 wins over Detroit, a win over Sacramento, a win over OKC, Orlando, Dallas without Luka, like, these are all easy games that this team should be winning.
You are really trying to keep me from hitting that turning point gong.
At the same time, though, they were losing these games earlier in the season. Yeah. You know, twice losing to OKC, right?
There it is.
Losing to Minnesota. Like, the truth is, at this point, if you look at the Lakers' schedule, they've largely beaten the teams they're supposed to beat. They have a few bad losses against those, but, like, they've mainly beaten bad teams, and they've lost to medium to good teams. And I want to see that reverse. You know, I want to see that trend reverse for me to fully buy into, this team has turned a corner. Yeah. This team is back. This team is who we think they should have been. Because until we see, like, if they go beat Minnesota and Chicago somehow is largely healthy and they beat them, like, okay, I'm encouraged by that. Then you got Phoenix at home. You win that game. Like, okay, now you're on a 6-game win streak. I'm encouraged by that. But until they start beating good teams, I'm pumping the brakes a little bit. But we had not seen any consistency from this team, and we are starting to see more of it. So I think they deserve credit. Maybe not as much credit as some people are going to give them, but I do think things are headed in the right direction. It's just a matter of, again, I want to see them beat some better teams, because I think they've largely beaten lottery teams.
Yeah, I think that it's such a good, important point that you just made that I want to just emphasize. I don't think people should get overly excited about the team, about these wins, because they're games that the Lakers absolutely should be winning. But like you said, they were letting their foot off the gas and losing early in the year. And I appreciated, frankly, that the Lakers beat Oklahoma City and Orlando so soundly. You know, those weren't close games. I know the OKC game, the Thunder made a little bit of a push late, and it was kind of like, will they? But, like, it wasn't real. I thought, you know, it's like we've seen the Lakers let teams back in games. The Lakers have played basically all close games in the second half up until, you know, I mean, I know they blew out Sacramento, but that was close at halftime. You know, Orlando, and, you know, they've been beating the teams they should beat in the way they should beat them. And last night was a little different, obviously. If you lose to Dallas, you know, I think that we're kind of back to the same old, you know, the Lakers are an up and down team. They're kind of around 500. Now they're only one game over. You know, the narrative swings pretty significantly on the Austin Reeves shot, and even more to the point on the Wayne Ellington three that was sort of, kind of luck that they got a second look there. But, you know, I don't know that that's a game they're winning earlier in the year. I don't know that they're blowing out Orlando and OKC earlier in the year. So to me, that is progress. And this is a team that, like for better or worse, has to figure a lot of things out over the course of the year in order to be successful, because they basically started over with this roster. And so to me, it's tangible growth, not a turning point. I don't believe in turning points anymore, but I do think that it's something that you can kind of hang on to as you try to slowly build something.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement. I will say some encouraging things lately. Like LeBron has been at an insane level, and you know, insane is, I guess, relative, but he's back to being LeBron. I think he's back at that MVP level. The one thing that's been lacking is the defense, and I would like to see a little more effort and consistency on him, from him on that end.
Which is why Austin Reeves is the Lakers' best two-way wing.
I guess he is, but Russ still has some Russ moments, but overall, Russ has been better. And I mean, you just look at the assist numbers and you know, cutting down on the turnovers, cutting down on the three-point attempts. I think overall, his shot selection has been much better. And finally, the Lakers have embraced going small. There's really only one small unit, which is when they go LeBron at center. Otherwise, they have AD at the five, or they have Dwight or DeAndre on the floor at the five. And like, that's not a small unit. And once they get Trevor Ariza back, I think they'll be able to put together some bigger small ball units. But overall, I think just having one big on the floor has been really key for the Lakers over the last couple weeks, and it took a little bit longer to get there than I think most people assumed, but I think they're finally there. I don't think they're going to go back to the two big basketball. We might see some stretches where they do that, but I think in terms of starting and closing games, they're going to stick with this, you know, smaller group. So again, like, you can only play who's in front of you, and you know, I think it isn't, I don't think you should hold it against the Lakers that they're only beating lottery teams, but they have some tougher teams coming up. Again, Minnesota, Chicago, Phoenix, Brooklyn on Christmas, Memphis, Portland, Minnesota again, kind of around the new year. So if they go 4-2, 5-2 during that stretch of games, like, that will be encouraging, and we can have a different conversation, and you can hit the dong again.
Which gong is that? Is it the turning point gong?
Yeah. I said the dong, so
you sure did. You sure did.
That's a different Forum Club podcast.
A thing about Austin Reeves, I did some research. Austin Reeves has been like, is kind of the game winner god. I don't know if you know this. Last night was his third game winner of 2021. Okay? So he had the Summer League put back. You remember that? Mm-hmm. You were there for that? Mm-hmm. Hit the put back in Summer League. And then in college at OU, he had, in double overtime against West Virginia, the school of Jerry West, Rod Thorne, and my father. He hit a go-ahead basket with like 20 seconds left in double overtime, and then he had last night. So if we are thinking of nicknames for Austin Reeves, should we call up Jerry West and see if he would, hand over Mr. Clutch?
Yeah. I thought you were going with Jerry West as his nickname.
Just call him like, Jerry West. That's... I mean, that also has it, potential. Sure. Sure.
Yeah, the logo, Mr. Clutch. Basically, it needs to be better than AR-15. I think we're in agreement that it has to be better than that nickname.
By the way, like, speaking of great nicknames that, like, were too long to tweet, like, Zeke from Cabin Creek, like, that was a good one. You know, the Hick from French Lick. Hillbilly Kobe is shorter than both of those iconic nicknames. Like, get out of here.
But
like,
the Twitter didn't exist back then.
Really? In Jerry West's time? But, like, where did Shams post all of his scoops? I'm very confused on how time works, apparently. Jovan, what do we need to do before you let the let them turn over your room for the next guest at the Spring Hill Suites in the West End of Dallas?
Okay, hold on, hold on. I'm at the AC Hotel, okay?
Wow.
I'm a man of class.
Wow. I didn't know you traveled like that. I didn't know you worked the expense account like that. When I travel, it is the Spring Hill Suites in the West End. It is, they have free suckers on the counter, lollipops that are, a favorite, and it's in close location to some of the finest dining establishments in Dallas. So, like, there's a Hooters nearby. So, I'm just saying that,
I'm sitting on a leather couch right now. I got a nice wood panel wall behind me. It's nice.
I'm just saying that all comes out of the collective pot that we all share, and I will think about that the next time I'm staying at, you know, some roach motel in Jersey City, waiting to cover the Lakers and Nets. So I will keep this in mind, and I will hold it against you. Jovan has a flight to catch, head up to Minneapolis to see if the Lakers can keep this momentum going. I don't. So we will get out of here and touch base again next week on the Forum Club. We certainly appreciate following along, listening, making it this far on this podcast, and reading our work at The Athletic. For Jovan Buha, I'm Bill Oram. Thank you for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.